Welcome to the latest Watercolors Aquarium Gallery podcast, brought to you from the Aquarium Rush Studios in downtown Grand Rapids, Michigan. I'm Ben.
I'm Amy.
And I'm Charles.
Today we're talking about fun freshwater stuff.
Yay! We just got done talking about our dream saltwater fish, so we decided to swing it back around this time.
We got to be fair to the freshies out
there. True.
And so this was a hard one for me.
Same.
It was both a narrow it down, because I like a lot of freshwater fish, because there's so many cool freshwater fish, but also what does it mean to be a dream freshwater, a dream fish?
Mm-hmm.
So there has to be, for me at least, there had to be a little bit of, it's not easy to get.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I'm sure everyone was expecting me to put a clown killifish on my list, because it's my favorite, all-time favorite fish, and I love them. But I don't think we've been without clown killifish for, like, a year.
Right.
So we always have them.
Yeah.
So that was part of my criteria, that availability had to be a thing. And with a company like us, that's, you know, that sets the bar pretty high.
Well, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say... I know at least, actually, I think all of mine but two, I could probably get fairly reasonably, like, come around from time to time type fish.
I think all mine ended up on that list.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, I had to narrow it down somehow, because I was at like 15 fish in no time. So that was one of the criteria. What about you, Charles? What did you use for criteria?
My criteria for like cutting my list down was, if it was in the store, would I have to buy it?
Mm. That's a good way to think of it.
Huh. Like, would I say to myself, I need to have it?
Right. Yeah. Right. I could see that.
Because I had like 12.
I had a solid 10. So, yeah.
So I had to do something drastic.
Right.
Mine were all I couldn't easily have for various reasons. Either, like, I really wish that I would set up a tank for them or could, or yeah, ones that just, man, if I could splurge, I would get them. I have a few of both.
I went with the, if I could find it, I would get it. So I guess maybe... in a different way, I kind of leaned a little Charles direction, that like, if I saw this fish advertised for sale, with some of these, I'm not going to say cost would be no problem, but there's one on the list that...
if you saw it, you would go for it.
Yeah, I'd go for it. Yep.
Life finds a way.
Right. All right, Amy, you start it.
All right. I'm going to dive in and do my farthest reach, I think.
Okay.
Which is a fish that I probably will never keep, and I will probably never set up a tank for, but I love it and I would like to be around one. African lungfish.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's fair.
And I'm not really a monster fish person. Right. Like, I'm not, it's big, it's mean, it's going to eat everything, but that is a cool fish.
That's a pretty amazing creature.
And I just want to hang out with one for a long time. I don't know that I want to set up and it's a big fish. Like, they'll get 4 feet long.
Right.
But they're not super active, so you'd still need a huge tank, I think, if you were to do them right. And yeah, that's not ever anything that I'm going to do, but I kind of want to. Like, so in that.
What do you think? 180?
Yeah, I think so.
Could you get away with... I think you're getting away with it.
Yeah, you are. You really are. And it would be like... I would... If it was low and wide, that wouldn't be a problem. If it was a standard 180, I think it'd just be a little tight.
Right.
But I think you would want it... I would really want it to be at least 2 feet wide. Ideally wider than that.
Do they even need filtration?
Debatable.
It's such a unique biology in a fish.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of my appreciation for that group of organisms is specific to the fact that they are more closely related to us than other fish are, and that presents some interesting, like, behavioral aspects for them. Like, yes, they don't really do a lot, but they are technically a lobed-finned fish, which makes them, almost every fish we keep in the store is a ray-finned fish.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, like, at a very high taxonomic level, this is something very, very different.
Yeah. Yeah. What are other lobed fin? Agar is a lobed fin, isn't it?
No.
No.
Like coelacanths. Technically, the way taxonomy works now, humans are lobe fin fishes.
Putting them in a group with a coelacanth really puts into context I think they're so cool, because they are just so purely like ancient wild things to see.
What else is on that list?
There's not a lot of them.
Camaras? No, they're cartilage.
They're cartilaginous. There really aren't a lot of modern lobe-fin fishes. I think it's lungfishes and coelacanths. And there's a third one, but I can't remember what it's called.
Paddlefish?
No. I don't know.
You don't have it.
Or bowfin.
I don't know.
Is bowfin on that list?
No.
No.
They're really, I just categorize them. They're really adapted ray fin fish.
I'm just, going through the species of fish, or actually the, not species level, the genera of fish that are particularly known to be ancient.
Yeah. Right?
Like gars and paddlefish and bowfin are very ancient fish. They've been around a long time. This is the only criteria I could come up with, is trying to figure out another lobe finned fish.
Australian lungfish, fun fact. This is me stealing the conversation a little
bit. Sure. I knew this was one that you guys would want to talk about. So,
are actually a really rare case in the animal kingdom where they are genetically really haven't changed in like a couple dozen million years.
Wow.
Because they're a rare case where the evolution strategy that works best for them is to not change. And that's very cool. That happens so rarely, because any sort of like extreme in any direction is selected against in the species, because they are just honed in on that one thing. So any deviation from it does worse.
I love to think of it from like a sexual selection standpoint, where we're like, who is the most average one of you that I can date with? We're not looking for excellence here. Just average as possible.
Just stability. That's all I want. Not good, not bad. Just right down the middle.
Technically speaking, sexual selection is actually the selection of the most average. Like a human face, if you composite more and more faces, the more attractive it gets. Because it becomes more average. What we perceive as a beautiful face is technically an average face of humanity.
Not this face.
I would love to see a visualization of that. That's a cool concept.
Yeah.
Very fun.
We digressed.
Yes, we did.
I love it, Amy. That's a definitely a holy grail fish.
Yeah.
That you have met the criteria.
Cool.
I approve.
Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate it.
It means a lot.
All right, Charles, what do you want to start with?
I'm going to start with, my first instinctive response for this list was I wanted to put like 8 species of betta. Yeah. The final Fair. List has 2.
Okay. 2.
2.
So very restrained.
So I'm going to start with one and end with one. The first one is going to be betta species antuta.
Antuta? I don't even know that one.
So it is in the Unimaculata complex. You know those big, thick, cheek iridescent scales that the males get.
Yeah.
So this is an undescribed species where the males get those scales around the entire head.
Wow. Where are they found?
I can't remember which state, but it's in Borneo. It's in one of the provinces. I think it's West Kalimantan.
Okay.
Okay.
If I had to throw out a guess.
Right.
They do definitely skew more towards like I know I said this is Unimaculata complex, but they do definitely are more closely related to Unimaculata than they are to the other fishes in this complex.
Macrostoma. Ocellatus.
So Macrostoma, Patoidi, Ocellata, Pelidophina, and there are a few others, but they're really rare. And there's right. like 20 undescribed forms, and Antuta right. is one of them.
And that's the one.
Yeah, that's the one for me. And fun fact, technically, I think that Macrostoma is going to be moved out as more genetic data gets in.
Really?
Yeah.
Fun.
It probably sorts into its own complex.
I think it does.
Because genetically, like all of the Unimaculata complex very clearly is like, yep, we're this thing. And then Macrostoma is its own clade, like 3 million years apart from everyone else.
Wow.
And I'm like, All right, fair.
If they got to pick their own genetic lines, I'm sure they would want to be separate.
Yeah.
Just based on all the macrostomas I've known.
The attitude they have, you bet. Mm-hmm. Tell me more about this guy, though.
More or less very similar to Inunu Maculata in care, behavior. I do see them from time to time, not on any of our lists, but occasionally imports from, I keep tabs on some of the like people who are importing from Thailand.
Yeah.
I've been tempted a few times, but I just haven't because having worked with Inunu Maculata, I would like to have a true like, probably like a 33 long, because they definitely use that horizontal space. And putting them in anything less than like 3 feet, I feel a little guilty. They don't seem particular about water parameters, much like most things in the Moon Immaculata Complex. They just like it clean. They definitely appreciate flow. Ted Judy has a few videos on a pair he had, and they definitely were more excited the more flow was in the tank.
Cool.
Which is something he learned because he's like, I want to film them, and the only way to get them out is to just blast them with current. But those, the iridescent like blue scales across the entire head.
Wow.
From the gill plate and up.
More than ocelotus?
Way more.
Oh, that sounds cool.
That does sound really cool.
Yeah, and it's like a, you're going to laugh. It's like a Luke Skywalker blue lightsaber blue.
Ooh. It's okay. You can go there with
me. Yeah, yeah.
I'm good with that.
It's like, it's a very distinct like sky blue.
Whereas the Unimaculatas are a little more turquoisey.
They're a little bit more turquoisey, and they definitely get some bronze in there too.
Yeah. Very neat. I would like to see it.
It's just a, you know, Unimaculata with spinning rims, you know.
Souped up a little. Yeah.
Great one.
Very cool.
All right, Ben.
I'm going with an obvious one and a betta just to keep the theme and a pair. I'm allowed to make those kinds of rules, you know.
Yes.
A pair of macrostomas. They're just to me the holy grail of bettas. I mean, I know there are some. Actually, you know, I read a little while ago about one they found across the ridge from macrostoma. That where macrostoma has red, this one has blue.
Really?
Right. That at first I thought was a color morph of macrostoma. And I need to find some more information. Charles is, of course, the if that happened, I would know about it.
Yeah, I'm sitting here like, I got to catch up real fast here.
Yeah. Like a betta hendra kind of blue or bluer?
A little hendra-like,
okay.
Yeah.
Very. Yeah,
but still with the lines that a macrostoma has.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. That would be really cool. Yeah,
but I tried to confirm that one before this conversation. I didn't confirm it. So I can't call that a holy grail fish because it might not actually exist.
Oh, we're not allowed to put imaginary fish down because Charles did that on the saltwater episode.
That's true. That's a good point.
It's called theoretical.
Well, I theorize that there's a, I don't know, fluorescent neon pink fish that flies around.
You know how terrifying flying fish would be if they did that, though?
Yeah, yeah, that would be scary.
Macrostoma does deserve some discussion, though, because
it does.
And I can't fault you for saying a pair, because we've got that female downstairs and she's nice, but when we had males that were displaying, it's an entirely different
They're
fish.
They're incredibly beautiful fish. Bulldogs. Yeah. I've heard them called bulldog bettas before, and I think that's an apt name for them.
they definitely attack the people who try to clean the tank.
Oh, yeah. They've got fun attitude. They're a mouth brooder. They're a betta that mouth broods, which, you know, a lot of people out there are going, yeah, because most of them do. But other people, like, I mean, that's cool.
Yeah, that's already cool. You're starting from a level of cool.
Exactly. Yep. They get some size to them. I've personally only ever seen two males in my lifetime in person. One was at a crazy store in Chicago, and one was the one that we had for such a long time.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting fish. I would argue that I think it's one of the few of the large bettas that should have soft water. I'm not going to say exactly like maybe not it's acidic per se, but definitely at least neutral.
Yeah. Yep. The 20 long, I think, is a little bit tight for it, but I think you can pull it off in a 20 long. going up to a 30 long, a 3 foot tank.
Yeah.
I don't think you need to go bigger than 3 foot for a pair. Some flowing water probably would help. When you see some of the videos of those guys in the wild, they're definitely in moving water.
Lots of cover because they did bicker in the 20 long.
They did.
She needed her space.
I feel the need to say that a lot of the Aquarius literature indicates that these form like a pair bond. My experience with them is they do not.
Yeah.
So they are more dotty back, like I would say in behavior, where they're more like, we're going to have our get together and then you can go away. Right. So anticipate that kind of behavior.
Don't expect them to be buddy-buddy.
Yeah.
Right.
Because like the Unimaculata pair, they definitely have an understanding. Like, I wouldn't say that they're a bonded pair, but they definitely like understand who's...
I really want to see how they would behave in a group. So maybe that's how I bring this fish that we have up to the Holy Grail level.
Yeah.
A group of Betta Macrostomus. When I had a group of Betta Ocellatus, that was a really cool dynamic in those fish. They worked really, really well.
When I kept Unimaculata in a group, that was a really interesting dynamic. They never bred, but it was always a contest of like... So one of the things that makes mouth brooding bettas very fascinating for me is the females are the dominant ones in these species.
Right.
So
even though the males get all that big, beautiful, amazing color,
they do that showy display. Yeah. And
so if you were paying attention and spending a lot of time watching your group of bettas, which I highly recommend you do, it's a lot like a soap opera because it's the females vying for, they show off. I've never really saw an actual like physical confrontation, but it was definitely like, I stole your boyfriend. And it was just very fascinating to watch the males waver on who's the cool lady these days. And I remember this distinct moment where like one of the females, there was one male in particular that everyone wanted in their harem. And one time, one female managed to hold on to him for like 2 months and then he jumped ship and then she sulked under a rock for like 3 days. And she came out and she was like, all right, I'll eat, fine. But like, and I was just like, wow, I've never thought I'd see what I could describe as like depression in a fish, like over a breakup. Like they were very clearly invested in whatever they were figuring out.
Was it depression or was she plotting her next move?
I know. She never got him back.
Tragic. Some things aren't meant to be.
Yeah. So I don't know. That was a long way of me saying, I think that's a very worthwhile experiment.
And the sparring in Macrostoma could not be overstated. Like the beauty of that display and that interaction is really, really cool.
When we first put that male in with that female, you had that video of that reaction by the female. That was
that full mouth gape. That display is beautiful.
That's my dad's favorite video we've ever released.
Oh, good.
We should post that one again.
It's on our YouTube channel.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's one of the early, like, just little clips that I had put up.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good one.
Cool.
All right, Amy.
All right, I'm going to go from my biggest to my smallest.
Okay.
The hummingbird tetra. Are you familiar with this one? We've had it in one time before. Mm-hmm.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's about a half-inch tetra, clear with bright orange fins.
What genus is it?
It is the genus Tricolocharax. It's not. I've never heard of anything else in it.
Yep.
Yeah. Great.
They're sort of like the jelly beans.
They were a little bit like jelly beans, but they have a more tetra-y shape to me. Like they have the shape of an ember tetra, kind of, but clear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or like just the body is clear.
Yeah.
Really unique little fish. Pretty outgoing for their size and disposition. It's one that like passed through, and I didn't pay that much attention to. But then like. It's like, oh, dang, I really should have bought those like a year or two ago.
We haven't seen them on the list since then, have we?
No, I have not.
Welcome to the club.
Well, and actually, I think we had just sold them and they weren't there for very long. Like somebody recognized what they were and picked them up really quickly. And then we went to that convention, the AGA, and somebody said to me that that was their dream fish. And I was like, we just had those. I didn't really pay that much attention to them. And now, of course, we're never going to see them again.
Right.
So
never
that
say never, Amy.
We have not seen them since.
Right.
So that's probably my closest to like a traditional Holy Grail fish. If we had that, I would definitely take it.
What's water like for them?
they are gonna want soft, but they did just fine in ours.
Did they color up?
They did, actually. They did. Okay. Yeah, they colored up. I mean, they had started to, but they went really quickly.
I think that's always a good sign of... So there are those soft water fish that need soft water. Mm-hmm. And there are soft water fish that can handle not so soft water. And coloring up to me is like a good indication of whether or not they're going to be okay in harder water.
And honestly, if there's a half inch fish that I didn't really notice enough to pay attention to at that time, they were probably pretty hardy.
You kind of make a good point.
I will say that, you know, with no qualms about it, because I think if they weren't hardy, they probably wouldn't have made it. But yeah, they're kind of an oddball nano fish that I never hear people talking about, other than that one other person that I had a conversation about them with.
We need to find those.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely going to keep an eye out for them.
Yeah. We'll have to send an email to our wholesale and say, hey.
See, they can scoop, like.
We need these again.
Yeah, I know. I got to remember what time of year. It must have been winter.
Probably.
Yeah.
For a tetra, probably.
Cool.
Mildly related, but related. This is a random plug for anyone who wants to come into the store and talk about our experiences with butterfly barbs. We have some very strong opinions on those. This is not the podcast for that, but.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Cool. That's all I have to say about that one. Look it up. It's beautiful.
Cool. Good choice. I like it.
Charles?
My next fish is the giant coolie loach.
Ew.
Are you familiar with this?
No.
So the giant coolie loach is, I'm trying to decide how I want to pronounce the genera name, Pangaea meyersi. And it basically looks exactly like a coolie loach, except it gets a little bit longer. Instead of being like 4 inches, it's like 4.5, 5. But body mass wise, it's about like 4 times larger.
So almost as thick as like a dojo loach.
Yes.
Oh.
But the advantage is also it is and like native to Thailand and Laos, meaning it's theoretically could be living in the same environments as a lot of the bettas I keep.
Ooh, yeah.
Fun. So it's really more of like... I don't know, a linguine than a spaghetti.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you hungry or something? Really need the food?
Oh, it is getting dinner time.
Yeah, it is.
Care-wise, I'm told they're exactly the same as other coolie loaches.
Put them in a tank, never see them again.
Yep. It's like Sasquatch. Every once in a while, you'll just see it out of frame and out of focus.
Tear the tank down and go, oh, I forgot about that guy.
I've got 30 of them in here.
Right.
But the one thing to keep in mind with them is since they are a lot chunkier, they're less prone to burrowing. They will still hide in plants and stuff, but they're also amazing shrimp predators. So,
yeah, as those things that sneak around in little dark places tend to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, the standard coolie loach
is amazing at it.
Yeah. Any loach, actually, I think
but adding some girth on it definitely makes them better at it.
And able to eat bigger shrimp.
Yeah.
And more of them in one sitting. That sounds awesome, though. Coolie loaches are already pretty adorable.
Yeah.
So a giant, chunky one
that's
is
all I
appealing.
Want is a giant, chunky coolie loach.
All the better if it can be in a biotope.
Yeah. And I'm told they're a little bit easier to breed than the standard type.
Okay.
Yeah. So if I ever was like, oh, I'll give it a go.
Yeah. Like, in other words, it doesn't only happen on accident.
Yeah. Ted Judy and Mike Helwig have both intentionally bred this species.
Okay. Cool.
Definitely a caliber breeder far above my own skill set, but...
it has been done.
But it's been done.
You'll get there.
Cool.
They might have... A couple more years on you.
Yeah.
What? Shots fired.
All right. So I've got my list and my alternate list, and I keep going back and forth. I keep moving stuff out. I'm going to stick to my list. No, I'm not going to stick to my list. I am. Leopard frog plecos. A pair of leopard frog plecos.
I'm really surprised to hear you say a pleco.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised to hear this be the one, though.
Right. That's a fair point.
It was this
point.
One or the Royal Zebra Pleco. And I definitely decided the royal zebra pleca was on my list because I put it on my list because they're more expensive than leopard frogs. And that wasn't a...
That's not in good faith with the question.
Although kind of it is, because that makes it a little harder to attain.
Right.
So, but the leopard frog... So a plecos on the scale of whether or not I think a pleco was cool, the more blended the color, the less cool.
Fair. Yeah, that's the way to judge it.
Yeah. If it's got really distinct dots, that's cool. If those dots are bigger and they're really distinct, that's even cooler.
True.
And the leopard frogs are these cute little Picoltia species that are out a little more than some of the other plecos, not quite like a bristlenose, but they're out a little more than some of the others, and they're gorgeous for a pleco.
That's the big negative to the zebra to me. Like, that's why this one would go up higher, is those zebras never come out.
Right. I got a zebra. Really? Yeah. Turn the rock over so I can see it. Oh, it's not under that rock. Hang on just a sec. Oh, did you see it?
It's gone. Right. Yeah.
Yep. Agreed. And the leopard frogs are going to be a little more visible than, they're still a pleco. They're still a nocturnal fish.
So how big do they get?
Like 3.5 inches.
Oh, wow. They're, that's neat. Guys. I always thought they were bigger.
I just had the thought. I don't know, but can plecos perceive red light?
Probably not.
I'm wondering how viable it would be to set up a tank specific, like a species pleco tank, and light it with red light.
They don't look as pretty under red light.
That's true, but you'd get to see their behavior. If there's a pleco with really interesting behavior, that's the way to display it.
Or, I mean, one of the nice spotty black and white ones, they would show okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You could do like a reverse day-night cycle for them, like you would for like a weird, I don't know, reptile or something like that.
I just want to see somebody selectively breed leopard frog plecos over like 10 generations and breed for activeness.
Yeah. That's probably what needs to be done for a lot of those wild plecos.
I'm going with that. There's my holy grail fish. I'm taking a play from Charles' playbook.
Getting the thumbs up here.
Is that the cheating
it's
playbook?
It's a theoretical fish.
See?
An
it works.
Leopard frog pleco.
Here's the thing. Entirely viable option, though. Like, someone can do it. Someone just needs to do it.
Right.
Right. And that's me trying to challenge anyone listening to, if you want to do it, go for it, man. Because we're all rooting for you here.
I wish behaviors were something that we were bred for more.
Agreed.
Yeah, no, versus just looks.
That's something that Amy and I were talking about, because I'm trying to work out, like, I want to selectively breed my own bettas. Mm-hmm. And I want to work with one of the wild types. And she was like, just breed for, you know, like best dad. And I'm like, that, you know, that's a good
kind of good thinking.
Yeah.
Betta's typical betta splendens is probably the best example of bred for behavior.
Yeah. And it's like the only example I can think of. And it was like bred for evil. Let's breed them for good instead. How about that?
I like it. I think it's a good idea.
Cool. That's a great one.
Thanks.
All right, I have another tetra on my list. Well, if I really wanted to cheat, it would be like a dozen of them, but I could probably go with pretty much any wild Congo tetra. The one I put on my list, because I really like it, is the Elestopterus nigropterus, which is the orange flash that has those bright orange fins and a really iridescent body. I think that's probably the one that I would go for. And it's available to us, but those are $40 a piece tetras. Right. And you'd want at least 10, wouldn't you?
Oh, you would. Yeah.
If you're going to do it.
The Lamp by Congo tetra was one of those that I like took off and put on my list for the very same kinds of reasons.
Yeah. And
another $40 tetra that you'd want 10 of.
Yeah. But I really chose this genus. I think that's my favorite genus of Congo tetras.
Amazing.
The lamp eyes are a different one. And then the group that the standard Congo tetra is, which is Phenacogrammis.
Yeah.
Those are like the three species or the three genera that I know of Congo tetras. These are my favorite. Size, behavior, and just care is pretty much the same as the domestic Congo tetra, with a little bit of, they're going to prefer soft water because they're closer to wild fish, or are wild fish in most cases.
Inch and a half long.
Yep.
Maybe two.
Sparring behaviors, but not that aggressive with each other. Males are prettier than females, but they're just much more expensive and much more rare. So if something that I would love to have a group of, but probably won't.
Almost seems like one of those fish we need to get in the hands of one of our local, like, hardcore breeders and say, okay, breed these fish for us.
Yeah.
I was about to challenge and say, someone out there needs to be the person that floods the market with these. Because if you could consistently pump out these fish and have them retailing at around $15, they would sell because they're gorgeous.
Yeah.
But $40 for a schooling fish, like, I can understand why anyone would be scared of that.
Yeah.
Especially for a fish they've never kept.
Yeah.
I think you're touching on something that is kind of the point of these kinds of talks is here's a bunch of fish that the only reason those fish are not a standard in the hobby like the regular Congo tetra is because they were discovered so much later.
Yeah.
They haven't been in the hobby long enough. They're just as viable. They're just as breedable. They can be just as hardy. And they're so cool.
Yeah, it's, to me, one of the biggest, like, the fish that has yet to be really, I don't know, the word I'm looking for is not exploited, but like
if you're the person
to be really delved into.
Yeah, like that's an, like, there are European breeders that are doing that across the ocean. Right. But like, if you want to be the guy that makes a real big mark on the hobby and you like breeding big tetras, this is the way for you to do it in America. Yeah. Holy cow.
Yeah.
5 or 6 rare species of Congo tetras are on our list every single week.
Yeah, but we don't order them because nobody wants them.
Nobody wants to pay $400 for a school of fish.
Yeah. I was like, well, everyone wants them, but no one wants to pay that price tag. Exactly.
They're just as colorful, and each species is just as unique from the others as, like, rainbow fish. Like, it's another very flashy looking fish.
But I like the Congos better, personally.
The regular Congo?
I mean, like, I like Congos better than rainbows.
Than rainbows.
Oh, right. Oh yeah.
And that's, there's nothing wrong
they
against
both
rainbows.
They have their own different
it's
places
just that,
to
like,
me.
The Congos are just, they're so cool.
Yeah.
And watching them behave together, it's just, it more appeals to the type of fish I like to keep.
Yeah. Maybe just the inaccessibility, too.
Yeah.
It's part of what makes a fish a holy grail fish. You want it more because you can't have it.
Yeah. And at some point, I will have a display with a dozen of some funky Congo in it, but it's not going to be for a while.
We should talk to our biotope guy and we can do it here.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, we do have those, that group of gorgeous lamp eyes.
They're amazing.
Their color is so good.
Right. Yeah. It's almost like someone has been trying to get them to breed.
That is a fish worth coming down to the shop to visit.
Because yeah. Just to look at
there's
them.
There's a few of those that we have in right now. The Apsaris Danios, those Congo tetras, the Kubotais are looking amazing, but that's not quite the holy grail fish.
No.
It is for a lot of people around here, though.
And there are a few more, too, but we'll keep our secrets to a point.
Come into the shop and see this.
Yeah.
Yep. Cool.
Excellent choice, Amy.
Thank you.
And you also made it so that I didn't have to have lamp eye Congo tetras on my list.
Because I got you covered.
I know, and we talked about it a little bit, so that's good enough. So I can talk about the others and set. So nice job. Thanks.
Perfect.
Appreciate having me back on that.
Anytime. All right, Charles, what's next?
So my next one is Puntigris anchiosporus, which is the Bornean tiger barb. So we've talked a lot here about how I really like Hexazona barbs. I also really like tiger barbs, especially the wild ones. And I have seen 4 species of the wild tiger barbs, but the Bornean tiger barbs have always been my favorite, in part because when you're looking at taxonomy of the Desmopuntis barbs versus the Puntigris barbs, is that there are some distinguishing features for how they get sorted, because they're both stripy barbs. How do you tell them apart? So for me, my favorites are the Hexazonas and the Bornean tiger barbs, because they're the most distinguished of the two genus.
Aha.
So this is the most tiger barby barb, and this is the most like Desmopuntis-y barb.
I don't know how to describe it, but I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. I do.
So personally, those are just my two favorites of those two groups. The Bornean tiger barbs, they came and they went to the rare fish auction, and I was tempted at the time But if they ever came in again, I would probably buy a group for myself. only because I let the first group grow because I knew exactly who would take them. And that's a person who deserved them.
Probably true.
Yep.
Did he breed them?
He tried. They're probably, his current hypothesis is that they're probably a little bit softer water than some of the other wild tiger barbs, which makes sense given that they're a Bornean tiger barb.
Right. So this is the part where you have to talk about domestic tiger barbs versus wild tiger barbs.
Yeah. So step one, domestic tiger barbs suck.
Yes.
So
yeah, I can pretty much describe it. And delve into the detail of why.
Yeah. So a lot of people in this podcast, I talk about barbs a lot. Mm-hmm. I love barbs. And whenever I bring them up in the store, people are like, aren't they mean?
Every
I'm like,
time.
Well, domestic tiger barbs are because, and I don't know what it is, but they are hybrids. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned that they're hybrids. And I mentioned I've seen like 4 species of the wild ones. My current understanding is that domestic tiger barbs are hybrids of all 4 of those species.
Over time.
Kind of a little, there's definitely some unknowns on where the original tiger barb came from.
And I don't know what it is about hybridizing them, but it turns them into jerks.
Well, yeah. I have a theory, and it relates to something we discussed earlier in this podcast. I think that the domestic tiger barbs were selected for appearance and not personality.
That's a good theory.
And if you select the prettiest tiger barb, you're selecting the most aggressive one.
That silence was this like epiphanal, like, whoa.
That's my theory.
I think you may have touched on something pretty good there, Amy. That's
pretty solid.
I think so.
It's like sort of the basis of why we prefer local breeders a lot of the time, because they're going to pay attention to the individual fish and how they interact with the others versus a farm where they're like, this one's orange.
Yep. Yeah.
So,
but I will say that of the wild tiger barb species I've seen come and go, never had a problem with them.
Right. And they're mellow.
They're so chill. The Hexazona barbs in particular, I recommend to a lot of people because they're very calm. Whereas like some of the other barb species can be kind of zippy like a Danio. Mm-hmm. I genuinely say that the Hexazona barbs have a personality more similar to a Cardinal Tetra. They have that same kind of like pseudo shyness. So for most community tanks, I think that's more typical of what you want. But if you want some activity in the tank and you don't want them beating each other up, the wild tiger barbs and some like giant Danios, that'd be a great combination.
Yeah, definitely. Great pick.
Yeah, very cool fish. All right, my next pick is actually one I'm working on trying to get.
Oh, interesting.
Right. And we've gotten a couple, we have had a couple of attempts lately. And it's the right pair of dwarf pike cichlids.
Ah.
Either Crenocichla notophthalmus or Crenocichla reagani or one of those in that group.
I don't know. Have you looked at those compressiceps we have down there?
I have.
They're so pretty.
Before. They're beautiful. Okay. There's something about the notophthalmus and the reagani that just seem a little more exotic to me than compressiceps. I think one could argue that a compressiceps is a prettier, has more of the qualities of a pretty fish than notophthalmus or reagani. But something about reagani and notophthalmus that I just really want a pair of those fish.
As a person that just like 4 minutes ago said, this is the most tiger barbie tiger barb. I get what you're coming at.
Yeah. You know, it's the most dwarf pike cichlid-y dwarf pike cichlid.
Kind of. Yeah.
So is it a pair specifically because you'd like to breed them?
It's the pair behavior. They form a bond.
Oh, they do?
They do.
Okay.
Yeah. So with some of it's the behavior. Yeah, if they breed, I think that'd be really cool. But I want to set up not quite, I don't want to go quite to a biotope level around those fish, but I definitely want to set up an aquascape around dwarf pike cichlids. And I want to try and push that concept of let's take some amazing fish and design an aquascape around those fish that's both aesthetic and complementary to the fish.
It's not done enough.
It's not, right? The world of aquascaping is amazing, and the strides it's taken in the last 20 years have been overwhelming and incredible, and I love it.
Yeah, if you want rummy nose tetras, ember tetras, or cardinal tetras.
Aquascaping's forgetting the fish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just to touch on it a little bit more for the people listening that may or may not know, a lot of the emphasis in modern aquascaping is schools of small fish and large schools.
Yes, to accent the beautiful planted display, which, by the way, I do not for a second mean to take away from that. And I love aquascaping.
Yeah.
Come in and check out our gloss out.
I love it. Yep. The level that I want to take it, I'm not even going to say it that distinctly, because as I aquascape, one of the things I want to try more of, while I'm also doing some more what we could call traditional aquascaping, is I also want to do some that are more complementary to a specific species of fish. And if that were a dwarf pike species, that would be incredible.
Yeah.
That's why it's a holy grail fish for me.
It's a fun way to build a tank, to like mm-hmm. start with, okay, how do you make this in a way that complements this fish's lifestyle perfectly and also is beautiful?
Incorporates all of the elements of design.
Like
proportion and balance and composition. And
when I just reset up my tank, I mm-hmm. built rock structure in the base that could be used as caves for my buffalo heads, because that's how they're going to show off the best, you know? Yeah. And I'm excited to see what you do with this tank.
It's been sitting up there empty for a while, so, you know, I'll get there.
I hope you've got some ideas.
I do. Okay. It's going to just all poof.
I don't know enough about just the lifestyle of pike cichlids in general, but specifically these species. What is their, are they cave spawners?
They are cave spawners.
Okay.
Yep. And they're micro predators, and they've got all kinds of attitude, like the big pike. But they're a predator. So it's not so much aggression.
Mm-hmm.
It's predator mm-hmm. aggression.
Which like is a very self-assured.
Yeah. Yeah. If they can't fit it in their mouth, they don't care about it.
It's like, it's there.
If they can fit it in their mouth, they will.
And they get about 4 inches, right?
Yeah.
So there are a lot of fish that don't.
Right. Deeper bodied tetras, most of those are just fine with pikes, with the dwarf pikes.
Like a serpe tetra or something like that?
A full grown serpe tetra.
Right.
With a full grown, and a full grown serpe tetra is going to get close to 2 inches.
Yeah. Yeah, they're good-sized fish.
I've seen some of the full-grown bleeding hearts,
mm-hmm.
and those with pike cichlids would be perfect, because those guys can get
cool, too.
They can get some heft.
They can get 50-cent size.
Yeah.
And a dwarf pike's not going to be able to swallow that. So.
Right. Cool.
I really wanted to do some research on whether or not I can get a pair of dwarf pikes to be okay with a pair of apistos. Because that would be, that would make me smile.
We haven't experimented much with what they can and can't.
Right.
Interesting.
They definitely get along with those zebra loaches.
Yeah, somebody find there. When the pikes get a little bigger, those zebra loaches will be Scooby snacks.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
There we go.
Cool. All right. The next one I'm going to talk about is the clouded archer fish.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that one up. I almost put that on.
Good. We're on the same page today a little bit. Yeah, these are a freshwater archer fish.
True freshwater.
Yes, fully freshwater. They have a very similar look to the archer fish that you're thinking of.
But don't get as big.
Yeah, I think like 5 inches is mm-hmm. pretty typical. They are being captive bred now, so they are pretty readily available. Although I think getting mature wild caught specimens would be better.
Yeah, it could be.
Because that archer behavior, which if you don't know archer fish, they're fish that are able to shoot water out above the water surface. I think up to a meter is...
They can get some...
Yeah, to shoot down bugs or whatever they want to eat. That behavior is not necessarily instinctual. It's learned.
That's true.
So I think you might be able to teach captive raised archers to do it, but wild caught ones are already going to know how.
Yeah. And you want something that's going to be able to teach the next generation somehow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's like the fun of it. Right. And they're very calculating fish. Like, you know that they're looking at every situation, trying to figure out how to solve it.
Yeah.
And those are the kinds of fish that are really fun to keep.
Right. Wait, go back. You mean fish learn.
Boo.
They're so cool looking too.
Yeah, they are.
It's a super unique pattern.
Mm-hmm. Clouded. Like it, yeah. It is like those black spotted blotches are very distinct and cloudy looking.
One of the, we did keep these, was it probably 3 years ago?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the biggest challenges with them is they can push their way out of a fish tank.
Yeah, we could not seal it up well enough.
We taped some things shut that they pushed the tape out of the way to jump out of the tank and end up dried up on the floor. Mm-hmm. I think we found 3 or 4 of them on the floor.
Yeah. And I think it's that some fish will just jump randomly. Some mm-hmm. fish will like look and find a spot. And some fish can look and be like, I think I can make my way through that.
Yeah.
And that's what they did.
An archer is going to have eyes that are designed to be able to see what's outside the water mm-hmm. much better than a lot of other fish are.
Yeah. Because it was very like, we would cover it up and then like another one would find the spot.
Yeah.
Some weak point that we couldn't make up for. So very well covered. And like, I think if it was a good enough like paludarium or something like mm-hmm. that, they would probably, if they jumped out, find their way back to the water. But if they get out of the tank, then they're out of luck.
They are. It's a sad day.
I think
I'd be willing to try those guys again.
Yeah, they need the right setup, and yeah. that's why I probably will never have them, just because right. they need those correct conditions.
Yeah, but if we had the right setup here at the store.
That would be cool. Mm-hmm.
I think right now I'll mention the Georgia Aquarium has the coolest setup I've ever seen for archer fish, because what they do is they've designed it so that the glass is about like 1.5 feet above the waterline, and that allows the keepers to, they will, this is going to sound so gross, they will take krill mm-hmm. and stick it on the glass.
Oh, so that yeah.
And that does two things. A, the glass is tall enough that the archer fish can't jump out.
Right.
But B, that means that you can watch them through the glass trying to shoot stuff down.
Right.
And I'm like, that's so cool.
And getting those guys to feed a not live food is sometimes a challenge.
Yeah.
But if they shoot it out of the sky, they're going to eat it.
Yeah.
I like that idea.
Yeah. And our clouded archers, when we had them, were eating flakes.
That's
like we
true.
Did get
those
them
guys
on
are
that.
Easy.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah. That wasn't the issue. So it was the jumping out.
That was their, yeah. the crux. But
a couple of them we didn't even find until we moved to the tank.
No. They were just underneath. It was so sad. Mm-hmm. Like, and it was an acrylic tank that is built with holes in various places that we had covered up with different things, and it was just never enough.
Right.
But
I kind of want to try it now.
I know. I do want to try it. I had gotten them started training too. Like I was feeding them in a feeding ring that they knew to come up to, and they would, like if I had food above the surface, they would jump to get it, but they didn't get that like
the spit thing.
Yeah. They didn't figure it out yet, but I wonder if they would. I don't know. They were on our list last week.
this
dangerous
is
conversation.
You know, we could do that. Although I had the same thing when we did our saltwater. I'm like, you know,
we could.
If we did this,
although yeah. we do have a tank that is sorely in need of a total overhaul, so maybe we need to pick.
Yep, that's true. Okay.
All right.
Maybe. Okay. So here's one of the things. One of the comments that we'd like to see
mm-hmm.
when we're done with this whole discussion. Give us some comments on the podcast about. Okay. What should we not what is I want to know what your holy grail fishes are, but mm-hmm. also, and we'll get back to this when we close, and we're not there yet, but of the holy grail fish we're talking about tonight, what should we set up?
Mm-hmm.
And then let's do it.
Yeah. If we get a response on that, that's something we will consider very
yep.
seriously.
Yep.
Like a single one. And you can email podcast@watercolorsaquariumgallery.com.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I like it. We'll
Charles,
touch that again towards the end.
Definitely.
So my next fish is Epistogramma agassizii collection location, Coypia.
I'm really glad an Episto ended up on the list. By the way, I just scratched Episto off my list because I had a hard time narrowing down, and it was challenging for me to not include an Episto on the list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The first draft of my list was 4 bettas in this Episto.
What is it about that collection location?
It is the most... You remember that one photo of an Epistogramma agassizii I showed you that looked... You were like, is that Photoshopped? And then I showed you a video and you're like, oh, that's not Photoshopped.
Yes, I do remember
it's
that.
It's a very vivid blue and like tealish, greenish yellow.
Nice.
And I did genuinely, like 3 weeks ago, I had a customer come in and ask me, so how often can you get this in? And I said, I've been looking for 3 years and I promise you, if I get them in, you will not get them. And he goes, that's fair, actually.
If we get him in, he'll be lucky if he gets them within a year.
Yeah.
Well, you could have told him we'd just get more.
It was just fun. He was the kind of guy that would take the joke. Okay. Right. But like the genuine answer was, I have actually been looking for this for a couple of years. Have not seen them available anywhere. Anywhere. It's just... It's just that everyone needs to look it up. So it's C-U-I-P-E.
Wait, hang on.
Oop.
C-U-I-P-E.
U-A.
U-A.
This is the coolest color morph of Epistogramma agazizii I have ever seen.
Which is saying a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Between the different collection locations and the captive bred ones that are coming out, but you're definitely right.
Yeah. I told the guy genuinely in this conversation too, is I said, if you ever see it, whatever the price tag is, pay it.
Yeah.
I don't like, and he goes, yeah. And I'm like, if it's $250 for the pair, it's worth it.
Wow.
Cause I was like, I can't find them.
I'll send some emails up. We got people.
We do have pisto people.
Cause we got people.
Yeah.
Right. Right. That makes me want to, like, one of these days we should do a podcast of what we consider the best genera of fish.
Ooh.
Sorry, I digressed there a bit. But
that would be a fun one.
Epistos and bettas, right? And what would the other three be?
Those are too easy.
Yeah.
I can come up with something.
Right.
But that's such the fun of epistos, isn't it? Like,
so
it's
cool.
Both the hyper specificity of the species themselves and mm-hmm. then the collection locations, and the collection locations for agazizii are distinctly different.
Yeah. We've talked about it here on the podcast before where taxonomically, I'm definitely a splitter. Mm-hmm. This is a case where I'm like, okay, we shouldn't be debating this one at all because every other species of Epistos is like a stream. And they're like, this is the entire Amazon River. And I'm like, all right, that's not possible.
They're going to start splitting up.
And two, just they are so distinctly colored from each other. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like, if you look at some of the, like, Panduro, like, complex ones, they look fairly similar.
Right.
When you look at the color morphs in agazizii, it's like, I mean, they have the same silhouette, but man, they are distinct.
Yeah.
To me, I haven't seen any genetic data on agazizii specifically, but that indicates to me some very distinct genetic lineages from each other.
Very cool fish. Epistos are just so cool.
I can't even remember the guy's name. If you listen to the podcast and you're the guy that came in here like 2 weeks ago and bought all of our Pisto Panduros.
Oh yeah.
Ben and I have been talking about you for like 2 weeks. You are so cool. You made us so happy.
Yep.
Just throwing that.
Panduro's my favorite of the Epistos, by the way.
Yeah. So being able to the next day tell Ben, be like, guess what I did?
Yeah. Yeah. Although those Winkleflex were very cool.
Those
too.
Are
yeah.
cool. Honorable mention, Ben, what was your Episto? Just curious.
Winklefleck.
Winklefleck?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, but what's your real pick?
Panduro. Oh, wait, what's my real fish?
I think it's your turn.
Okay. Yeah, no, neither of those were really on my list. Sorry about that little extra noise there. Didn't mean for that to happen. SB pencilfish.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I'm actually really happy you brought up pencilfish because I nearly put the purple pencilfish on my list.
Did you?
I almost did. Because I almost did, but go with yours.
Yeah, so this is Nanostomus spi. It's so somebody's going to call me out on this. This is either myth or fact on why they have such varying degrees of availability. They are found exclusively in Colombia, and the civil war that was happening in Colombia for the last X number of years between the government and this group of people. And I cannot remember the name of the group of people that control a certain portion of Colombia.
typical American.
I know. I can't remember either.
And actually, like a year or two ago, they made some peace, finally, where they had some leader of Colombia who said the only way we're going to make peace is through forgiveness. And yes, this organization did some really bad things, but so did the Colombian army. And if we can't get past those bad things, we won't ever find peace. And so they actually found some treaties and some peace and some civility. And that made these guys show up every once in a while.
I'm pretty sure they showed up around 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah. Because you could safely then travel into those portions of Colombia, where these guys are found. They also have really cool, like, vertical bars on them, and most of pistols are all horizontal bars, and that makes them kind of special and unique. And they're distinct, kind of like my Pleco thing. They're not blurry lines; they're really distinct lines.
Can we just like rave about pencilfish in general here? Because like
underrated, the whole group.
They're so underrated.
Yeah.
I think they're the ideal dither fish for pistos.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Because they have a personality similar to a tetra, but their mouth is like a third the size. Yeah. So like they can't even go after like a pisto fry.
And they're tougher.
And, yeah.
Right. So if an pisto gets a little feisty and gives them a little smack down every once in a while, the pencil is going to be fine.
Yeah.
Whereas a tetra is a dither.
Go cry in the corner.
The turn into little bits and pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Pencil fish definitely deserve that. And to me, the SB pencil is the top of the line with, you know, the coral red and the purple, Morton Thalerai and Rubra caudatus being like right up there. Those are a couple of really, really cool pencil fish.
Yeah. And those are the showy, colorful ones.
Right.
But like, color is not the only part of a fish that's.
Yeah. The
cool.
pattern on the SB to me is what put it on my list.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, and even just going to throw this out here, even the brown pencil fish.
Yeah.
That's a cheap dither fish that is really fascinating to watch in a tank.
If it had a cooler name, it would be way more popular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Because let's face it, brown,
that doesn't get anyone excited.
No.
You could have a black ghost knife or a brown ghost knife.
Yeah.
Which one are you going to pick? The black ghost knife, but the brown ghost knife, by the way, is just as cool. Mm-hmm. They don't get nearly as big.
They just happen to be brown.
Brown.
Whatever.
But, or like Amy and I have been marveling that. Have you noticed that our pencil fish downstairs are trying to blend in with the wood?
They'll line up at the line of the sticks of the driftwood and just be like, hey, we're sticks now.
Yeah, they mimic.
Yeah, it's really, really
so cool.
I love it.
Because we've got one of those super branchy pieces of manzanita in there. So they all like, they're like berries on the tree. That's really cool.
And it's really funny because like I'm sure it looks great to another fish or something, but like to human eyes, I'm like, okay, you're very clearly not a stick.
All right, let's put you underwater in tannin stained water that's cloudy and see if you can tell the difference between them and a stick without your glasses on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pick at him because he's got glasses.
I mean, whatever. We're all blind, you guys.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, fish see in different spectrums too. So
right.
For all we know, they might be perfectly blended into another fish.
Yeah. Probably. Yeah. I would think so. Like if it was a big root system of a fallen log, you'd never see them.
True.
Because that like it's a juvenile, but there is a geophagus in that tank. He never notices them.
Yeah.
Ever.
The first time I saw a seahorse underwater, I found it because I was 7.5 inches from it.
Yeah, they're much better than we think they are.
Yep.
Cool. Okay. I think we're on me now, right?
All right, Amy. This is the last, right?
Yeah.
This is the last one.
This is my
one,
last.
Right?
Well, I mean, unless you want to do the two that I crossed out.
We might end up having to go to some of those.
The lightning round. So I cheated a little bit on my last one.
No.
I chose Channa blairi.
Oh.
You knew I cheated as soon as I said Channa because we cannot get them.
Nope.
But this is a fish that if I saw it in some imaginary place where it was legal,
right.
If I was living in Europe,
yes,
I would probably not only buy it, but set up a specific tank just for it.
They're amazing. That's the dwarf ornate one, right?
There's an ornatopinus and there's a blairi that are really similar.
Okay.
But they get about 8 inches.
Mm-hmm.
Color on them, amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Stunning fish, gorgeous personalities, really weird, interesting looking animals. And if I could get them, that's probably a fish that I would keep.
Right.
Just, I would want a tank just for that. It's like the, I like those fish that are sort of like the medium fish that kind of beg their own tank. And that's like yeah. the ideal version of that to me. Small snakeheads. I don't even know if I said that it was a snakehead.
No, I don't think
But every species of snakehead is prohibited in the United States. I think blanket, right? Or is blanket. It just, yeah, the entire,
the genus
Channa. And these are tropical fish, so theoretically they could not survive in our waters, but I completely respect every fish that is ever banned. I would never keep a fish illegally, ever. But if it was legal, I would.
Yeah. I don't think that's cheating at all. I think that fits into the category, maybe even better than some of the other ones, because a holy grail is unattainable.
Yeah, and I will never get it. This is not an invasive species. Don't lump every channa in with the northern snakehead. They can't all survive here. They're not all crawling out of the rivers to come attack you and your family.
I do like to picture the like really crappily like photoshopped one like coming out of the water and it's like.
have you never seen Snakehead Terror, the movie?
Yeah, I have.
Okay. Because that's what I think of whenever somebody talks to me about them.
I've actually kept snakeheads.
Have you?
I had one named Zool.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of was it? Which snakehead was it?
But we just all called it snakeheads then.
Just so one of the big ugly ones?
The big ugly ones,
okay.
Yeah. But we got them all as juveniles and none of them ever grew up. Mine actually got killed by a puffer.
Oh, that.
You know, if you were to ask me who would win that fight, I would really go back and forth.
Yeah, the puffer did. Like,
good to know.
Brutally.
Wow.
Yeah. Went for the gut.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Zool did not last long.
No, that's sad.
Right.
But I don't know when they became illegal.
Early
90s.
Oh, really? I was going to say early 2000s. Because if I had to throw out a guess off the cuff, I would say like 2002.
That could be.
Somewhere in that neighborhood.
This was circa 1990 that I had one.
Before I was keeping fish, so to me they're like the ultimate unattainable.
Right. Yeah. There was a store in Easttown, which is one of the kind of the cool neighborhoods here in Grand Rapids, that had one that was about 28 inches.
Ooh.
And that thing was just vicious.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, they had bricks on top of the glass to keep it in the tank.
I completely believe that. Yeah. They are muscular fish.
Yeah.
Like, I bet they could burst through pretty much just glass. Like,
They're definitely an athletic fish.
Yeah.
Yep. But the one Amy's talking about, Channa blairi, is not one of those monsters.
No, it's like the biggest betta that you can think of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what's appealing to them about me.
If you've ever come into the store and talk to us about like the big bettas, part of the appeal for them here to us is that we can't have Channa. So the closest thing we can get our hands on, like look and behavior wise, is the largest betta we can find.
Yeah.
Yeah. The importer has actually changed the common name of betta macrostoma. It used to be called, instead of the big mouth betta, it was called the snakehead betta. And so customs would regularly bar them from coming in because it had the word snakehead in them.
I believe it. I've
but
heard
behavior
that
behavior and size and look is very similar.
I've heard that story about betta chinoides too, because it's got. No. I've heard both.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were both at various times called snakehead bettas.
Yeah.
But betta chinoides took a little bit longer for customs to check on because the scientific name has channa in it.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the scientific name for betta chinoides is betta that looks channa. Like.
Right.
And the appeal to those is that they're teeny, teeny, tiny snakeheads.
Yes.
But I like the medium one. I think that's just right.
And they're so pretty.
Mm-hmm. And like, I've seen videos of people who keep them in like Europe or Asia or whatever in like gorgeous like aquascapes. Because they're pretty mid-water most of the time. They want a little bit of cover, but like you can keep them in planted tanks just fine.
They're not going to mess with stuff.
No, they're not. And it looks unreal.
Right.
Looks CGI.
They're gonna lurk.
Yeah.
I remember, so Practical Fish Keeping is a UK published fish keeping magazine. And one time one of my very generous friends of my mother bought me a subscription to it. And I do remember distinctly having this like, wow, like there was a special issue where there was like three articles on like biotopes for Channa. Mm. And I was like,
yeah. Sad. Can't always get what you want.
Maybe someday.
Maybe someday. We'll see.
Northern snakeheads never need to be importing insects. Again, they shouldn't be all that. But
yeah. And if the only way they can keep control over that is to blanket ban, I am absolutely for it.
Absolutely. But if they find a way to do it legally and they get around some of those biases, that would be great.
It should be allowed. I very much respect the people who are trying to protect our ecosystems, but please. And that's all I have to say. If you're listening, I'm crying a single tear.
They're not listening, so let's move on.
Right. Fine, Charles, what do you have to say?
There's no way anyone at this table can guess what the last fish on my list is.
I know it's a betta.
I think I know which betta it is.
It's betta stickos.
That's not.
Do I even bother telling the story? Like, I know I've said it several times in this podcast.
No, tell it. I want to hear it.
I think it was last year at the GVAC swap, one of the vendors had brought betta stickos, right. And I was sorely tempted, but I told myself, be a responsible fish keeper. No. You don't have room for it right now.
You can make room.
Just pass on. I have not seen it since. And this is the rarest betta in the Splendens complex. I have looked into what it would cost for me to, as a private person, to import them. I would, for the pair themselves, pre-shipping, I would be spending about $120. And I'm still thinking about it. So if you're in Michigan and you're willing to come down to the store and you breed betta stickos, give us a call.
Or the surrounding areas.
Yeah.
Do you remember who had them?
I don't. And dang. I've multiple times tried to contact vendors. I actually went through vendors from that and were like, were you the one? Nope. No response. And I'm like,
blew in on the wind and disappeared after.
I have genuinely joked where I was like, if I could time travel once, I would go back in time and buy all the pairs, because she was offering them for $50 a pair, which is exceedingly reasonable for that species, mm-hmm. without needing to pay shipping.
Mm-hmm. It's cheaper than many of the more common betta species.
Yeah.
Right. For a pair. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
there's a little regret there.
Are they soft water, dark water?
They don't care.
They don't care.
They are
like a Splendens or a Mahakanensis.
They are in the Smeridina group.
Perfect.
So they're just, everyone I've been told, they are just as easy.
Right.
How?
We got to get this list together and get this to the wholesaler and say, here's the actual, here's our list, guys.
If you can get this.
Yep. We want them.
They've invited us to do so, but I don't know if they know what door they've opened.
It's like a Pandora's box.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of species of fish.
Right.
More and more every day, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, for me, this is the one. I've talked about it a lot in the podcast. I really like the Splendens complex. They're the ones that I work with almost exclusively at home. You notice there's no killifish on the fish my list. I love them all, but I do them here. Mm-hmm. So when my criteria became what I'm pairing at home, that immediately excluded all killifish, because part of my mental gymnastics between distinguishing what I do here and at home is I need to keep them distinct.
Sure. Yeah.
Just so that both remain fun.
Yeah. Totally understand that.
Yeah.
But so this for me, betta stickos is the epitome of everything I would want to have at home. It's not only a Splendens complex betta, it's a Smeridina group betta, and it's the rarest one.
Totally fits the criteria.
And I'm like, come on.
Ticked them all off the list there. And how do you describe a holy grail fish? Right there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We'll find them for you, Charles. I know we'll find them.
We'll find them. Oh, it's going to happen.
We will find them. Yeah.
All right. I'm ready to hear yours now.
had a, so this was actually the easiest one. This to me is the one that fits that criteria of if I saw this fish, I would buy it. Mm-hmm. The other ones I see them sometimes, I go, it's just for me.
It would be nice, and yeah, I really want.
It's fun to have those guys around. This last one, my last choice here, it's not a killie. Although some of the Nothobranchius killies, it's very hard for me to not talk about them. Notice how I plugged them right there. That was very.
Oh, which killie is the Nothobranchius killie?
Nothobranchius, the dirt spawn is like Rakovii or Eggers Eye or.
We're plugging,
it's not lightning round yet, guys.
It's not lightning round, but I'm going to plug it. We have like 7 species of Nothos in the store. If you're looking for Nothos, come in right now. I will show them off just to show them off.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Neohatterandria elegans.
Ooh.
It's a pygmy live bearer found exclusively in Panama. There are actually 3 species of Neohatterandria. Kana, Trident Tiger, and Elegans. Trident Tiger and Kana technically would qualify as more holy grail because Trident Tiger I've heard of once in the United States.
Wow.
Kana, I've never heard. I don't think anybody's ever had that in the States. And Elegans, of those 3, is the easiest to get, but that's saying a lot. They're the prettiest. They are one of the smallest vertebrates on the planet.
That's insane.
Their adult size is just teeny. Now, there are definitely some catfish that are much, much smaller than they are, but they're the smallest live bearer. I know what they are. They're the smallest vertebrate in North America because technically Panama is part of Central America, which is part of North America.
Oh.
Smallest vertebrate in North America.
Wow.
Not too far away from Hatterandria formosa. The least killifish found in the coasts of Florida. But Neohatterandria elegans is one of those fish that I have actually kept twice. The first time I kept them, I actually spawned them pretty easily. Got my points for them. I even bought them back. Right? So at the auction, you got to turn in. If you're gonna BAP something, you got to turn them in and auction them off.
Right.
And I bought them back.
I feel the need to explain to the hearing audience. Ben and Amy just turned and looked at me. I was drinking when he said, I bought them back, and I nearly choked.
Yeah. But I could not, and I've heard this as one of the issues with these fish, I couldn't get the second generation to reproduce.
Wow.
And they're like a 2-year fish. They're so small. Fish. Teeny little guys. I had them in 2.5-gallon tanks with a bunch of Nias grass, little corner filter. That was all they needed. They were eating flake food. I'd throw some microms in there every once in a while. They were pretty easy to keep.
Yeah.
Could not get them past the second generation. So that makes them a holy grail fish. They're difficult to get. They're difficult to keep long term. Yeah, and if I could find them, I would. If they showed up, if someone said, "Hey Ben, there's a guy in Chicago who can ship you some Neohatterandria elegans," I would call him tomorrow, and we would have a tank of Neohatterandria elegans tomorrow.
We have had them here once.
We did.
They're very cool fish.
I found them at one of the national conventions of the American Live Bear Association.
And I think we got either a trio or a reverse trio, and we lost the single.
Yep, we lost the male.
Yeah, so not. Yep. Not much you can do after that.
Both times I've had them, I got them at American Live Bear Association national conventions.
Maybe time to make a post on that Facebook page or something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure somebody's got.
I'm sure someone would be so distraught if we wanted some of theirs.
Right.
That is a really cool fish. There's something about just something that is so small.
Yeah, and still pretty.
And still pretty and still, like, so worth caring for in all these different ways.
Right.
And it's so tiny.
They're so tiny.
All right.
Something about those little...
All right, I'll take some of your little live bears in my little Tetra tank, okay?
All right, that's okay.
We can share.
Yep, I like it. All right, who'd we miss? Lightning round.
All right, I have... mud skippers on mine.
Oh, that's a good one, Charles.
Big fat clown loaches.
Big fat clown loaches. Nice.
Very different than just clown loaches.
Yeah. I had a pistos and nothos.
And I also had elephant nose.
Oh, those are fun.
Yeah, it is just like, if I had the space, it would be really fun to have
them. Have you ever seen those in a group?
No, I've only seen one or two at a time.
When they're a group of like 15 or 20 of them, that's how they should be kept.
Yeah.
That's how, and that's part of the problem with elephant noses is sometimes we can get them, but to get the personality and the behavior out of mm-hmm. them, they're a schooling fish. You need like 10 yeah. or 15 of them.
But they're neat.
They're so cool.
And I like to say mormorid.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not lost on me. I appreciate that.
It's a great word.
Right.
I would love a betta ocellata pair descended from Mike Helwig's fish room.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that'd be good. I think the rest of my lightning round stuff, lampi, Congo tetras, royal zebra plecos, clown killies, I think I mentioned them. So.
Well, I think generally we could probably go all night on this discussion.
True. Yeah.
And we could probably go all night on probably most of the ones that we brought up today.
Right.
But we shouldn't.
But we bet we can make some really cool YouTube videos out of this stuff.
Or save a little bit of it for tomorrow.
Yeah, that's true. So tell us your holy grail fish. What is that fish that, wow. So, you know, and actually here's where this kind of comes from. And I think this was kind of the inspiration for this. We strive to get in rare and unusual fish. And part of the reason I love doing that so much is because I love seeing the joy on someone's face when they walk into my store and say, hey, have you ever seen this? Is I've been searching. Someday I'm going to have fish X. And I say, oh, yeah, we have those right over here. That to me is just one of the funnest things.
Oh, yeah.
I love that.
Have I ever told you about the easiest sale for me to make in the store that I didn't want to make was?
Which one?
So remember when I was working on those pair of betta hendra downstairs? Yeah. A guy came in and he mentioned offhand, that's the holy grail fish for me. And I sighed and I said, come downstairs.
And it was a perfect pair.
They were amazing.
They were just like the exact way you wanted betta hendra to look.
And I bring that up not... Being perfectly honest, I don't regret it. That man deserved those fish because he has sent us pictures. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's displaying them beautifully and he's treating them right. He deserved them.
Yeah, I follow him on Instagram now.
Yeah. Nice. But like that was a sale that at that day I did not think I would make and I had not ever intended to make. But when someone said that's the holy grail fish, I had to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you do.
Just because as a, having this discussion here at the table, it's like anyone that's willing to sell us these fish, we know what it's like to, I need that fish.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are some of yours? Show us, tell us, send us some emails, comment on here. What are some of your holy grail fish? Even if it's, you know, like Amy's snakeheads that we can't get.
Yeah.
It's still fun to talk about.
Or my lungfish that no one really wants to get.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Those fish that you just, you don't know why you need to have them, but you do.
I guarantee you'll get some appreciation from some of us for whatever your crazy ideas are.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Otherwise, follow us on Instagram, follow us on YouTube, do all that social media stuff that
we'll definitely
likes to
post
do.
A discussion on Facebook for this episode, but also just send us a message with some of the stuff that you want to see. You can email us at podcast@watercolorsaquariumgallery.com.
Oh, and definitely tell us of the fish we talked about tonight, which one should we make sure we do?
Yeah.
And we'll do one of them, at least one of them. For sure.
If somebody tells us one of these fish we should set up a tank for within reason, we will.
And if we get, you know, a whole bunch of votes for one, even if it's only sort of reasonable and we can pull it off, not the snakeheads, but if it's reasonable, we'll do it. I like it.
And even if you just want to, you know, message us questions, you know.
Just normal ones.
Yeah, you know. just throwing that out there, guys. You don't need to be specific. Just,
no.
Or even podcasts you'd like us to do or videos.
Sure.
Yep. I'm always happy to hear feedback.
Sounds good.
Otherwise, thank you so much for listening. Have lots of fun and let's keep those hands wet.